Beware, spoilerphobes. You've stumbled upon A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones in conjunction with George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. Now that we're in the final season and well beyond the books, the podcast will include a spoiler section later in the episode that can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, production spoilers, guesses, theories, and crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. And if that isn't for you, feel free to jump off after the first section. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder.
One of two things will happen. Either the dead will defeat the living, in which case all our troubles come to an end, or life will win out.
And what then? Don't fight in the north or the south. Fight every battle, everywhere, always. Your mind, everyone is your enemy, everyone is your friend. Every possible series of events is happening all at once. Live that way, nothing will surprise you. Everything that happens will be something that you've seen before.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez and I have not read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
My name is Joanna Robinson and I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all those books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, and, a couple other things here and there.
So you two were both like, oh, yes, this song that we finally get to hear more of a line of, where I was like, ooh, Podrick sings an original song. That's how we all felt this week.
If we're being completely honest, I didn't know what the hell that was until I looked it up later.
Let's be real. Neil and Joanna did not know what Jenny's song was until someone else told them.
I believe all the people who said that they knew it immediately, because there are people out there who did. But I am not one of them.
Only one line of Jenny's song is ever like cropped up in the books. So, though it's cropped up a couple times. It's a favorite of Robb Stark's. Anyway.
Well, yes, but I've been reading everybody's posts and listening to everybody's podcast because you are listening to Storm of Spoilers, the Game of Thrones podcast that takes all that input and comes up with crazy thoughts and speculations. But don't worry, that is in the second half of the podcast, the storm half. There are many warnings, including this one right here, and the timestamp in the show notes, and a long clip from the show that will warn you before we get into spoilers. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about Season 8, Episode 2, A Night of Seven Kingdoms. Of the Seven Kingdoms. A Night of the Seven Kingdoms. I'm going to get it right.
Nailed it.
Because it's important.
A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Who put that K in there? I'm so sad that we didn't get the pro-literacy conversation this week, but we'll save that for the pod. First, this is where I remind you about Con of Thrones, July 12th through 14th in Nashville. Go get your tickets. Use the promo code STORM when you buy your tickets to get, I think it's $5 off. You're definitely going to want to come and hear from Jaime Lannister himself what it was like shooting the knighting scenes and stuff. And then maybe his horrible death because it's Game of Thrones. But that's what you're going to hear from him.
Also
not
us.
On the show. And us. Oh, yeah, us. I should probably use us to sell us more. God of Thrones, July 12th through 14th. And before we get to the episode, which I'm obviously champing at the bit to do, Joanna, did we get any reviews we want to read this week?
We got a few. We got one 3-star review that I really am not sure I can disagree with. 3 stars from K.R. Strickler, who says, keep practicing. Great podcast. Painfully awkward ads. And I just want to let you know that the painfully awkward is like part of the point.
Wait, the ads that we've been doing since Game of Thrones came back are awkward? I had not noticed.
But I heard someone today tell me, or someone today said that they listened to the Blue Chew ad like 10 times, and I'm not sure what other advertiser like can boast.
You know
that.
What? Yeah, they remember Blue Chew. Yeah, is all sure I'm saying. Do. That's how advertising works.
So when they need erections, you know what's going to jump to their mind?
Blue Chew.
Okay, anyway, Blue Chew did not pay for this episode, so let's
go.
Yeah,
they're getting a little freaky there.
And this other one, Cautionary tale. I'm going to read it anyway. 5 stars. The storm devastated me, from a learned doctor. I was in the storm. I was prepared for the storm. I knew what I was doing and I knew what to expect. It was a storm of the endgame mailbag. Nothing could shake me. I believe in how spoilers can enhance, but then what I'll refer to as the theory was spoken about. I was not ready for it. I had to go outside, have a smoke, and process what I heard. It gutted me. Why? Because it tracks. Because it makes sense. Of course, that's what Game of Thrones does. Again, I knew what I was doing. I just wasn't as prepared as I thought I was. But before I go off and cry some more, let me warn those of you who are curious. If you're entering the storm, be 100% sure you're ready for it. Harden yourself. Come prepared. I freaking love the show. P.S. I'm still crying. So, I really like that.
What a great review.
Right? Well, no, he like owned that he was where, yeah, you know, he didn't get mad.
I love honesty.
The doctor could be a woman. I don't know why my internalized misogyny just said he, but anyway, that person,
you know, thousands of years of
tradition as Brian says.
This is really tough.
Anyway, that person did know what they were doing and still did not have fun. And for that, I am sorry. But also, thank you for acknowledging that this is a consensual sort of exchange of information here.
Yeah, you got to be ready. Also, I think we've been getting a lot of questions in email and on Twitter about like what is in the storm. And here's the thing. Everything's in the storm. Everything is in the storm.
Everything. That's what makes this podcast different from other Game of Thrones podcasts, is we're willing to read a lot of crazy like Reddit threads and emails from listeners to form our crazy opinions. And because, you know, everybody's so good and such a big fan of Game of Thrones in this community, occasionally those things get to be right. It's not us. We're enriching it. Right?
It's all about execution, Dave.
That's right.
All right. Good for reviews?
All good. We're done.
All right. Good, guys. Good reviews. I think that 3-star one could have been 5 stars, but I understand that, you know, those 2 of those stars went to Blue Chew. This is your reminder that if you want more bonus content from us that does not involve ads, maybe that's this person's way around it. Let me give you a solution. We do 2 other podcasts about Game of Thrones every week. Even this week, where you're going to be getting an Avengers Endgame podcast from us tomorrow, we have another feed for our Patreon subscribers. If you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, we have different levels. The lowest level, the free folk, which is not actually free, but it's just $1, will give you access to our Slack community, where people are live chatting the episodes. We have different spoiler walls to keep everybody safe. It's been great. You have our Maester level of donations. Those people get a bonus episode on Monday of hot takes that have recently been including songs that I make up mere minutes before we start recording.
What?
And therefore are ridiculous.
I would never have been able to tell that.
Listen, the production value on those is...
Definitely. They will surprise you and might be worth listening to the bonus pod alone, judging by the comments, not trying to toot my own horn. Then, if you get our highest level, our small council level, you will not only get the Monday episode, you will, of course, get the Wednesday episode that you're listening to right now in the normal feed, but you'll also get another feed with a different episode where we answer your questions from the small council level. Again, without spoiling anything, it's for everybody. Spoilers are all here on the main podcast. Later in the episode, hot Game of Thrones reactions come at you 3 times a week. Patreon.com/stormofspoilers. All right, let's take a break and then get to the episode. So let's say I've been working my muscles a forge in King's Landing for years, and then I have to flee, and then I get taken to Dragonstone, and then I'm stuck in a boat for years where I'm rowing. So, like, that's some upper body strength, but that's not full physical fitness. Then I get back to King's Landing, and all of a sudden, I'm on, like, an adventure that not only takes me beyond the wall, but reunites me with one of my crushes from years ago. I need to make sure that I've got that cut forge body. Not only am I cutting dragon glass into spears, I'm cutting these abs down to size. What do you guys got for me up here in Winterfell?
Dave, I have excellent news for you, because I'd like to tell you about OpenFit. OpenFit is an app that takes all the complexity out of losing weight, getting fit, keeping your workout schedule. And here's what I'm thinking for you, Dave, because it sounds like you've had a rough ride, but it sounds like you do keep up with your fitness. And it also sounds like you're running out of time, so you're probably pretty busy. Here's something cool that I learned about OpenFit. They have this super simple workout plans, including one called 600 Seconds with celebrity trainer Devin Wiggins, where it's all about all the things you can do in 600 seconds, which is, what, 10 minutes? So it's very easy to stay up on all your workouts. You can do it from your computer. You can do it from your web-enabled TV, if you have one near the forge. Do it from your tablet, your smartphone, your Roku. All you need is to get whatever the Wi-Fi password is at Winterfell. They can hook it up.
That sounds good. Who do I talk to about getting the Wi-Fi password around here? The Maester. I guess Sansa's pretty busy collecting all that grain and
what's the Maester's name at Winterfell? Walken?
Maester Woken.
Woken.
He's so
Woken. Maester Woken, what's the Wi-Fi password?
Maester Woken could also use this. There's a lot of yoga. He seems very calm and...
Oh, I know what the Wi-Fi password is. It's Hodor with zeros instead of O's.
OpenFit has changed the way that we work out, and with our code STORM, you can join us on a fitness journey personalized just for you. Again, use our code STORM and start using OpenFit for your journey to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-Day Challenge, our listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit, where you can lose up to 15 pounds in 30 days when you text STORM to 303030. You will get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts and nutrition information totally free. Again, just text STORM to 303030. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Oh, and don't they always apply? Turn on the Roku by the left forge, Neil. I've got some work to do. And we are back to talk about this week's episode of Game of Thrones. Neil, you are our maester here at the Citadel of Crazy Town and handle some of our interactions week to week. So what do you have for us in your Rookery?
I don't know. Okay.
Do you guys know? Okay, my friend read this book called The Raven Master that she was telling me about, and it's about the guy who like tends to the ravens in the Tower of London. And can we just like, Eddie, you have to like train for many, many years to be this person. It's basically like a maesteryman sort of situation. So this is a free plug for the book Raven Master, but I kind of want to read about it anyway.
All right. Cool. Well, I've gone down to the Ravenry. Rookery doesn't sound like the right word. I don't know why. Anyway, we got all kinds of ravens this week. All kinds of fun stuff. We'll start with our weekly poll that we do on Twitter. You can follow us, twitter.com/stormofspoilers. This week's poll for maximum cruelty. We bestowed upon our followers the gift of the Lord of Light and said you can give Valyrian steel plot armor to any character you want. Well, any of the four characters in the poll. But only one of them, and you can guarantee that they live, and who do you want? So we picked out Theon Greyjoy, Grey Worm, Podrick Bane, Tormund Giantsbane for the followers. But first, I want to talk about who we would pick. And we do not have to be constrained by these four options, because this is our podcast. So I would like to hear first from you guys, starting with Dave. Dave, who are you suiting in your Valyrian steel plot armor for next week?
This week, I transitioned entirely to Seam Sansa, and let me explain to you why. I think, as I told some of our maesters on Monday, that she has fully absorbed the best parts of Littlefinger and Cersei in terms of politicking, and I think she really has a control over the situation, both in Winterfell, and I think kind of the upper hand in the stare-off with Daenerys this week. So, even though Sansa's not on high threat, certainly not as much as the other people who are in our weekly poll, who are all on, like, red alert, I am now sort of ride-or-die Sansa plot armor. I would sacrifice all four of those characters to get Sansa a couple episodes deeper into the final season.
Nice.
Sansa.
We're definitely going to talk more about her political skills later. I have similar thoughts. Joanna, For whom would you like the bell not to toll?
I mean,
in the Battle of Winterfell.
I know there are plenty of people listening to this who didn't listen to our bonus episode, but like, in case you haven't heard me yet talk about my feelings about this episode of Game of Thrones, I care a lot about Bran and Jaime. I don't know if that occurred to anyone listening, but
yeah,
I
haven't really heard.
Yeah, yeah. They're the best. So I do not want them to have this moment. If this is their last moment before they die, that's fine. It was a beautiful moment. I want them to have more moments, though. And this is why I'm going to circle back really quickly. That, like, big theory that Jaime kills Cersei, that a lot of people have. This episode is, like, one of the reasons why I hate that theory. Because, like, doesn't that sound like a bummer for Jaime and, like, really painful? And wouldn't it be cooler for him to get into, like, the King's Landing elevator and pull a Don Draper and be like, I don't think of you at all? You know what I mean? Like, not kill her. It's just so rough. So dark. He's coming up to the light. Let's stay in the light, Jaime Lannister.
I will say this, without allowing this to totally derail this entire segment. We are all, in our conversations about Game of Thrones, focusing on all the worst things that could happen. And I feel like we're not talking enough about it, the things that could go right, but we'll get to that, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. We'll get to that is how we should definitely end a lot of Sent Raven's thing.
Awesome. I did not want to let this moment go without you saying the couple name that you've wrote in the notes, though.
Oh. Well, I don't know if our listeners know this. Hopefully you do. When you ship someone, right, which means to, like, root for them romantically, comes from the word relationship, I believe. When you ship two characters, usually that ship has some sort of, like, portmanteau name to it that the people who, like, care about those people use. And in the age of social media, you can hashtag it or whatever. The one for Bran and Jaime is Braimy, and I just think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Oh, that's so bad.
It's very bad.
Stop it, Twitter.
So I've seen some other ones.
Sounds like a Scottish insult from like the 1940s.
Oh, you Braimy. You wee Braimy. but so instead of doing that, I wrote down Oath Slayer.
I like Oath Slayer. Because you know what? They're both so good at slaying those oaths together.
Yeah. But don't you like want to keep, maybe it's Oath, Oath Keepers is something. Basically, I'm saying like.
Well, no, they only keep their oaths when they're together. Separate, they're very bad at keeping oaths.
Brienne is an Oath Keeper.
Well, until she met Jaime.
I don't know, that you just contradicted yourself, like, within
That's
seconds.
True. she didn't do a whole lot for Renly, is what I'm saying.
It's Kingslayer. That was not her fault, a smoke baby. So, it's Kingslayer plus Oathkeeper, Oathslayer. But if you want to come up with something else, I mean, mostly we need to rename Jaime's sword, which is still Widow's Wail, which is terrible Joffrey's name, right? So, like, if he gets a cool new sword name, we can maybe portmanteau there. Or maybe I should just call him Ice, because Ice is, like, what they're... Two swords are together.
Combined sword.
Anyway, that's my long, long answer to the poem.
Well, I'm taking Gendry, because obviously we know that Gendry had a big moment this week. And I think everybody's feeling pretty good about Arya's chances, but I don't know. Like, you know how they always say whenever you, there's that whole, let's do it one more time before the war, or let's do it once before the war, and then you go and die in the war. Gendry, maybe. That could happen. So, I'm sticking with Gendry. I'm holding on to him. I want him to live on. I want him to make more fun stuff for Arya. And weapons
someone,
and shit.
I think it was in our Slack, but someone said, why didn't Gendry make Jaime a dragonglass hand so he could just, like,
punch things? Punch
and it would look like a Captain America, like, shield things from Infinity War, where he just sort of, just, like, punches people?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Cool.
Anyway.
I love it.
Why doesn't everyone have dragonglass Wolverine claws? Once you start asking those questions, I feel. No, hear me out. good.
Okay, cool. So Gendry, the answer that our followers on Twitter picked was Tormund Giantsbane, 43%. Pod came in at 27. The other two didn't crack 20, so everybody's feeling pretty good about Theon and Grey Worm, I guess.
Giant's milk!
Giant's Milk, you know, it's working. Okay, on to a couple of questions. I got two here that I picked out. First one is an email from Ken. It says, do you think there will be a rousing speech to rally the troops before the battle? And if so, who is your pick to deliver it? Who gets to give the big speech?
Yeah, so, okay, so Miguel Sapochnik has said that they're using Helm's Deep from Two Towers as, you know, a partial inspiration for this. And you know, the images that we've seen of people carrying crypts reminds us of some of the images from Helm's Deep and stuff like that. And in that section of the Two Towers, obviously, Théoden King gives one of the best speeches of all time. And so who can match that? And like, I'm afraid it's going to be John. It's got to be John, right? He's the big damn hero.
Ooh, maybe it's Daenerys.
I don't know.
That'd be a fun one.
I don't, would it? Because like, I feel like Daenerys, well, this is about to sound gendered, but I feel like Daenerys' speeches would be like Buffy's speeches, which were really boring, actually.
My favorite scenario here would be Daenerys gives a rousing speech in support of John, but that's too nice for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no, they're fighting right now. Maybe Tyrion. Tyrion gave a good speech to the Blackwater. Maybe Tyrion gets to give a good speech. But my like ringer, speech giver is Jorah. I don't know. It might be a good moment for Jorah, who's been letting me down this season. So
it would be a good way to resurrect Jorah's situation a little
at
bit.
The end, and then at the end he goes, "For House Tully," or something like that. "Sorry about your dad," like that.
Dave, do you have a candidate for this?
Jorah is not a bad idea. What I would like, though, is a little break from the Helm's Deep as like basis and have location-based speeches. So I want Davos comforting the archer dude that you talked to in like this episode. I want Brienne, not John, giving the Stark speech. And then Jorah, it looks, is over like with the Knights of the Vale and whatnot and some Greyjoys. So I would like him to give that speech there. But intercut some speeches, and then we get all the speeches. That's what Dave says.
It's a multi speech theory. I like it.
Yeah, why not both? GIF.
Well, then I'm gonna
everyone can wear the mask, Neil.
Yeah. I'm gonna take what I thought was gonna be Dave's answer, but I'm gonna say Sansa would be a very good candidate for a speech. Especially a mid battle, everything, the walls are closing in, we need to make a stand, we need to do something.
Who's given the best speech? One of my favorite speeches, I mean, Tyrion's a good candidate from Blackwater, but one of my favorite speeches is Theon's when he gets knocked out.
Right before he gets his ass kicked. I really like, I've always liked the Daenerys speech from the dragon that she gives to the Dothraki in the beginning of season 7.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Because you really feel like she's sort of conquered group, but
yeah, maybe it does have to be Daenerys because of that. Maybe that's the most effective speech, is a huge dragon lands in front of you and then she yells at you from it.
Right, if they're setting anyone up to sort of turn in, you know, to sort of have a turn before the battle happens, it's Daenerys, because right now she's very isolated, she's very angry, she's but we'll see. we're blowing the whole rest of the thing.
What is it exactly that Stannis says at the Blackwater? I mean, he says, like, you know,
come with me and take this city.
There it is. Thank you. I'm giving you,
and I love
Stannis
that his
impression.
Men go crazy.
Yeah, I'm giving your Stannis impression a C+.
Thank you.
You did a better job when you did his death line recently. That was a good one. This is some work, Stannis.
It's tough to take that like weird monotone or that like just sort of dead monotone and then raise it, as we saw in the show. Okay, that was a good question. Thank you, Ken. Got one more. This is from Samantha. Hi, Storm Crew, longtime listener, first time caller. Nice. I'm wondering if you think there will be any significance to episode 5 airing on Mother's Day. Maybe there will be implications for the mother of dragons or possible incest love boat baby. Oh, God. Maybe for Cersei and her maybe pregnancy. I like the idea, but I also thought episode 2 would have some Easter symbolism, and that never seemed to happen. I would be interested to hear your thoughts. And also, Samantha notes that she's waiting on the storm until the season ends, which I thought was important before I heard that review that Joanna read before. So, you know, just to reemphasize that. Anyway, Mother's Day significance. Do we think there's going to be any? Dave, start us off. What are your thoughts?
Yes, but not because it's Mother's Day. Because it's episode 5 and a 6-episode final season, and there are a lot of mother-baby question marks that you pointed out, and nicknames about dragons. And episode 5 would be a great episode to have a dragon fight. And if it's like, hey, mother of dragons and dragons, then that would be, you know, cool.
Did they do... do I remember correctly, was there a... There was a Father's Day. That was the Stannis burning Shireen thing, right?
Yes. That
was on Father's Day.
Also Tywin Lannister died on Father's Day.
But, like, you can't...
But that's just because... no, you can't. That's just because Game of Thrones airs around-ish this time of year. And, like, you know, basically... Game of Thrones is airing when it makes sense for HBO to air it for Emmy, you know, availability and like coming after True Detective, but before Big Little Lies or whatever it is, you know? So it's like, you cannot plan your plot around that, around those kinds of jokes. As much as I loved thinking of the Tywin Lannister thing and the Stannis thing as Father's Day jokes.
So I guess the real answer to this is maybe we'll get some accidental stuff.
For sure. And then we get to talk about the synchronicity of the universe being on the side of everybody watching Game of Thrones the night it airs.
Cool. All right. Those are both of our questions.
They were excellent.
We are ready to talk about...
Yes. Talk about those things we said we were going to talk about. We'll do it right after this. So guys, I was taking a trip north to visit some of my relatives, and I realized I didn't have like any good luggage, so I did what you normally do, you know, you roll everything up in a blanket and pack it onto your mule, but like that mule's really slow and he wasn't into the blanket thing, so by the time I got to visit my relatives in Last Hearth, there was nobody there.
What a bummer.
I really feel like the northern Gonzaleses have been entirely wiped out and fight for the Army of the Dead. And I could have been the one to prevent them with my extensive knowledge of how to defeat the Army of the Dead, had I been able to get there without my blanket packages on my damn mule. Somebody help me out. I've got another northern problem this week.
Here's my suggestion for you. It's not just that your mule is slow and now all of your family members are dead or dismembered, or both. It's that, like, your stuff is gonna get, like, banged up if you just have it wrapped in a blanket. What I like is my away suitcases. They're nice hard-sided suitcases. They're really durable, and they come in a variety of sizes, and you can just wheel them around and do whatever you want. There's the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large. If you're moving your entire life around the map of Westeros, you might want the large. I love the away suitcases, and I definitely think you would have made it home in time if you had had one. Neil, what do you think about this away situation?
I love this idea. They are excellent suitcases. I also have an away suitcase. They are made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. This could be very useful if you are in a hurry to get from, let's say, Last Hearth to Winterfell before they close the damn gates. Other great things, it's got a TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag, so it prevents people getting in there and stealing your stuff. It also helps you get through security a little bit faster, easier. Great. It's got a removable, washable laundry bag. It's really just sort of fantastic. I was actually really excited about this one because the away suitcases are very cool. They have a lot of different sizes. What they suggest is that you do a 100-day trial. Live with it. You vibe with it. You travel with it. You can even Instagram it. And hopefully you survive with it to get all the way back to Winterfell.
Do you guys think that a premium German polycarbonate could kill a White Walker?
Well, I guess the question we really should be asking is, does dragon fire burn German polycarbonate.
If it does, Away.
I'm going to go with no.
But if it does, lifetime warranty from Away. If anything breaks or is burned by Dragonfire, they'll fix or replace it for your life, your entire life, however long that is in Westeros. There's free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. So yeah, Neil and I are big fans of the Away suitcase, much better than Dave's blanket situation.
As a Gonzalez, as the speaker of the dead for the Gonzalez Umbers, I feel like I should say that Ned asked for more wagons. Like, we obviously...
What he needs is more storage space, place. Yeah.
That's correct. So let's say for $20 off a suitcase, I could visit awaytravel.com/storm and use promo code STORM during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/storm. Promo code STORM, and then I could have made it in time to be like one of the cool arm spirals on little Ned's pyre.
Oh, you would have made such a good arm spiral, bud.
And we're back to talk about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, a very pleasant episode where we get to hang out with people as they think they're going to die. But we don't have to see them die. And really, isn't that what I want out of a Game of Thrones episode? So here's the thing. Dave loves the show that is a show about politics. It is a show about two people having a conversation in a room. There wasn't a lot of politics. There's a lot of conversations in rooms or two-handing scenes walking through the courtyard or on the battlements of Winterfell. I like it. This is the type of game, the show that I like. When it starts to go into, trying to recreate the high point emotionally of the Red Wedding or trying to top itself with battles. That's also when it's on the most perilous ground. I think A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is not only a good episode, but an episode that knows what the show does really well and leans into it, which is not a strength of credit that I usually give the writers and producers of Game of Thrones. Sometimes I'm not sure if they know what the show is, but they definitely do. I was wrong maybe about some things in the past because I like everything that I see here. Let's throw to Neil.
Yes, I agree. This is the sort of episode that makes me believe that they, a little bit more, at least, that they know what the show is, because what they're doing is they're paying off a lot of stuff emotionally, which I thought just excellent. And they're taking time. I think the thing that I complained about last week was that it felt rushed. This did not feel rushed at all. So this felt like they were allowing characters to sort of sit with the things that they had done and have conversations about consequences and life and all that good stuff. And so it's a really like sweet episode right before, you know, in the shadow of all the doom and gloom. So, yeah, I mean, great episode. It's great. Yeah.
Mm. Joanna, you want to ring this great bell one more time?
Shame. No, great. yeah, no. I mean, obviously, this episode was freaking amazing. I think people who listen to our podcast are not the people who are only here for, like, dragons and explosions. I could be wrong. Maybe you're just here for dragons and explosions, but I don't think we spend a lot of time talking about those.
Yeah, we got a lot of book readers around here.
I hope you're not too bored by our podcast. Anyway, no, this felt like it was made for me, which it wasn't, but it felt that way. It felt like a big, like, loving gift from the Thrones folks on our way out of town.
It's not 100% impossible it wasn't made for you. Let's just be clear. Prominent writer of Game of Thrones and lover of Jaime and Brienne relationship. Not 100%.
You never know.
Clear.
It was not made for me.
I will.
I'm very certain.
Not exclusively for you. No.
It was made for the Jaime and Brienne venture.
I do think it's interesting. You know, we've off the top, we should talk about the person who wrote this, Brian Cogman, who Joanna did a wonderful podcast interview with and several Vanity Fair articles. I think it's really interesting that Brian Cogman, in my mind, I've always said this, or I've always thought this, that they give him the hardest episodes or the episodes that would be the most difficult to write. And he kind of has to figure it out. Like, that's my impression of it.
That's not true.
That's probably not true, but he does seem to get saddled with some of the more thoughtful, contemplative walk and talk episodes.
That's
and,
what he likes. Yeah.
You know, I think that it's got, you know, it's led to all kinds of different results over the years. Just sort of based on where the bigger story is going, but it just, it felt right. Like it felt perfect. Like it reminded me of, was it season one? Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things was his, right?
Yep.
It reminded me a lot of that where it was like, you know, let's slow down and let's see how these characters feel about where they're at. And, I think it's a really good, this is the right spot for it. I think is the biggest takeaway I took was like, this feels like the right spot for season, 8 to slow down, take a, you know, take assessment of a couple of things. And, yeah, I'm really impressed.
Also,
it's really great.
Also on that, Brian Cogman interview for this episode on still watching Game of Thrones, he talks about how like the first draft of this episode was like a Wikipedia article about everybody before they met each other. And knowing that and then rewatching the episode and see what they were able to like distill the moments down to, like on one hand is really masterful. On the other hand, it's going to make me go a little bit easier on all of Arya's interactions last week, knowing that they had to build to these interactions this week. I feel like that makes me more forgiving of the first episode. I was not expecting to get two episodes of like getting to actually hang out with these characters. So I think I might have been a little too harsh on Winterfell for being, well, no, I wasn't too harsh on it because the dragon riding thing was dumb, but I might have had like lobbed a little bit of unfair criticism its way because it knew that it had time to do this other episode, which we didn't at the time with foreknowledge. But yeah, such good character work. And like my reaction to it while it was going is, oh, this is really fan servicey. But then once the episode ended, I had to stop and think about, well, not really, because characters aren't jumping out of their way to do something they wouldn't do. And like, even for me, who's like a stickler for like arcs being telegraphed or whatnot, this all felt like of a piece. And then the knighting scene was just like so emotional that I had to like go back and watch it again and be like, no, it wasn't just me. This is like written to fit together this way and shot really wonderfully with some coverage that really works, as opposed to maybe another movie we'll be talking about this week that needs to put a whole bunch of ensemble characters together. And I was just very impressed with the execution of it. All of my like foibles I would have are just like actual strategy foibles of the characters in the show, not how the show was actually done. So it's weird for me to still be in the season and think maybe best episode of Game of Thrones, but maybe best episode of Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about best, because I mean, I think it'll have to see how it works as a companion to the Battle of Winterfell and how on the main we'll feel like maybe we were, if we were emotionally manipulated in any way. I don't know. I'm still curious to see how this works with the thing that comes after it. I don't know. It's like, it might be the best episode of Game of Thrones. It's definitely in my top five. But so is Kissed by Fire, which is another Brian Cogman episode, which is season three, Jamie and Bran in the bath. So
I guess the reason I value it so much is because it has so many things that feel like emotional conclusions to arcs. And like the whole show has been withholding that from me. I mean, I'm saying for everything except the copy and pasting of Ghost into a scene that he probably wasn't in the first place, which ruined that. But other than that, all of these other like pairs and stuff are things that I've been wanting to see for at least 1 year, maybe years and years. So it, like, it's going to be hard to separate the emotion from this one, I think, even after we're all the way through the finale. Or if it isn't, and the finale is somehow hits the same amount of points, I will definitely talk about Game of Thrones as season 8 as maybe best season of television.
What?
Of all time.
Wow. Yike. Maybe I
don't take that one to Twitter just yet.
The hottest take.
No, the time to tweet best season of television of all time is right after next week's episode.
Yeah,
that's when I get the maximum amount of
hashtag likes. Avengers Endgame.
Best episode ever.
Season 8, episode 3 of Game of Thrones is the most ambitious crossover ever attempted.
Yeah, it's the moments, like one example that I think best shows like how hard they worked to earn this episode and then how easy it was to sort of like pay it off is the Sansa and Theon stuff. When I talked to Brian Cogman on the Still Watching podcast that Dave mentioned, he was like, I had a whole scene where Sansa and Theon had a long conversation about like how they felt about being tortured by Ramsay and blah, blah. And it like turned out we didn't need it. And they don't. Like the Sansa and Theon stuff is so powerful in this episode with just like one line exchange, a hug, a like eye contact, and then a meal shared during a montage. When so like we've had that Sansa photo, Sansa in the courtyard of Winterfell eating for so long, and like you can see the end of another spoon on the other side, so you're like, who is she eating with? And we were all like, oh, maybe she's doing like a Lady of Winterfell thing, visiting the troops. And so when they started montaging and it like cut to Sansa, and I was just like, it's Theon. I got really upset in a good way. So, but yeah, but they could do that. They could do it with so little because we all struggle bust through season 5 together. You know what I mean? And so like this is, and that feels so much more earned than, I don't even some of the Jon and Arya stuff, because we had like one episode of Jon and Arya before they were split up, two episodes, I guess. You know what I mean?
The Sansa and Theon thing, I would like to say, has maybe my top 5 favorite shot of the entire series, as someone who picks out a lot of shots from the series. I love both the intimacy of the hug, but then the way that they rotate the camera around and you still see Daenerys sort of standing there.
She's not
being
happy.
Like, what the fuck? So to take that moment where this is emotionally resonant moment, but you keep the politics in it. Yeah. And it's in this way where it's sort of off to the side. I absolutely love it. And I mean, the cinematography in this episode is great. We talked about David Franco on the Monday pod, the cinematographer. He shot both of these first two episodes. There's a lot of stuff in this episode that feels, again, very intimate. It's designed to make you feel how big Winterfell is, how high the walls are when they rise up to see Jon and Ed and Ghost, copy-paste Ghost, standing there. There's a lot of like really good visual tricks in these episodes that sort of create this more intimate setting where I think the conversation stuff thrives. And that's what I have to say about the cinematography.
Yeah. All right.
I love that shot. That shot of Sansa and Theon is just, it killed me. Just killed me.
Yeah. Also the shot before it, and I think I've talked about this elsewhere. I'm trying really hard this week not to repeat myself on podcasts, but I'm doing a worse job than usual because my emotions are so high on this episode. So I just end up like shouting about the things
you
I like. Love.
It? This is great. have I told you this is great yet? But, did you guys see that? Did
you guys heard about?
She smiles at the end. Usually, do you know, that means she's happy?
I usually try, but this week it's hard. But anyway, yeah, that shot of the hug is great. The camera rotation is great. And it's so funny because, like, I don't have Neil's eye for cinematography, but the shots that I've made into GIFs, I can tell you, like, what they look like because I've, like, studied them, the frames, because I go frame by frame and stuff like that. And so, like, trying to match that hug with the hug they shared when they said goodbye in season 6. And when they said goodbye, it was not a camera spin around. I was like, ooh, that would be great if it was camera. Oh, it wasn't. All right, fine.
Well, there were only 2 people involved in that hug. This one had 3.
Brian was watching. The cuts to Brian. Oh, yeah, I guess. Anyway, yeah. The shot right before it where you just, where like, Theon just like looks at Sansa, and then you just see Sophie Turner in profile, and she like swallows hard, and you can like sort of see her like throat and under her, like the soft part under her chin, just sort of like contract. like,
all right. Yeah, that's another thing that I keep coming back to about these first two episodes so far is Maisie, Sophie, Isaac. Yes, we're on first name basis, me and the cast. All the kids and how good I think last season, season 7, I sort of marveled at the chemistry that Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke had, which was sort of it felt refreshing to see them sort of thrive in scenes together. But man, I mean, these kids were cast 10 years ago. John Bradley from last week. Like, this is, they are delivering.
And Art Parkinson.
an Art Parkinson's running ability. But like, you think about these actors who were so young when they cast them, and they're delivering these some incredible performances in these moments. And, you know, that takes a lot of work, especially from where we saw them when they started as children. And I think it speaks to sort of the grueling nature of making something this big, and how when they really get it right at the end, when they stick these landings, these emotional landings, like, that's why you cry, you know? That's why you're a blubbering mess. And when I say you, I mean literally me, blubbering mess.
Also me.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you feel Dave, that because...
Dave, did you cry?
Yeah, Dave, did you cry during this episode? I cried multiple times.
Oh, did I cry during this episode? Yes. Did I cry during the Theon...
Oh, yeah, and I don't know. Yeah. Oh, well, no, that's fine. But you cried during the episode.
We're not keeping like a cry point score or anything.
Okay, full on. Let's move to my cry score then. Knighting. I know we need to talk about it. I'm trying to think about what do we bring as a podcast. Is this a Sir Duncan the Tall something?
I mean, it's a little bit. All right. Brienne, you know, one of Brienne's heroes is is Duncan Egg. Because the Duncan Egg stories are not just stories that George published as a second book. They are stories that exist in universe. So I guess, yeah, Brienne is a big fan of Sir Duncan. Sir Duncan, it's not the same Sir Duncan that's got married to Jenny, right, Joanna? There's two different, there's Duncan Targaryen and Duncan the Tall. Yeah. Right, yes. A lot of Duncans flying around in this episode. But yeah, that's one of Brienne's heroes. So now Brienne is a knight, just like Sir Duncan.
And so, okay, your mileage may vary. I wrote a piece about this a couple years ago where, like, George R. R. Martin gave a reading where he said that reports out of that reading implied that Brienne was related distantly to Sir Duncan the Tall. And then friend of the pod, Pat Spinaga, was at that reading, and he was like, I think that's a stretch of an interpretation. So I'm leaving that as a question mark. A lot of people were stating it as fact this week, but Pat is a really smart guy, and I know how things can get, like, misinterpreted and things like that, and we only have, like, word of mouth of people who were there. So we have no, like, recording. I can't, like, listen to George say it myself and really, like, understand what he was saying. So it's a question mark to me whether or not Brienne is actually related to Duncan the Tall, but if she were, that's kind of cool. And, like, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is the name of, you know, a collection of the Duncan Egg stories and stuff like that. So, like, it's a nod to Dunk. And then just think about if they survive Sir Jaime and Sir Brienne, like, wandering the Riverlands. I fanfic this in my, like, what I
feel I like
wish
this was
happen?
Like a 2 years ago fanfic.
No, I thought I did it. I thought I did it in, when we were, like, fanficking what I was fanficking ending. My happy ending.
I feel like I'd heard that long before, though.
Jaime and Brienne wander the Riverlands. No, it was an original thought. How dare you? Jaime
no,
and
it was your original thought. You just had it earlier.
Jaime and Brienne wander the Riverlands, like, righting wrongs. Putting right what once went wrong, hoping each time their next leap would be the leap home. But anyway, either that or they get to row off to Tarth, where the dead can't swim there. I think they should go to Tarth anyway, because, like, If people, you know, wind up going to islands this season, because the dead can't swim and they don't think about dragons or whatever, Tarth is, you know, it's near stuff. It's near King's Landing, it's near Dragonstone, you know. Just, like, go to Tarth, guys. Have a nice time.
Sapphire Isles.
Yeah, do it. Anyway. I'm sorry, did I
lose? Not named after real sapphire.
Did I lose track of the point?
No, that was exactly the type of answer that I wanted. Now we could just talk about it as amazing television.
It's
about
also
characters we like.
It's also worth noting that the story of Duncan the Tall is that he sort of rose from nothing and became, you know, a hedge knight. Became the hedge knight, sorry. And so there's similarities in the way that they sort of just persisted and were humble, and yeah. You know, all the things that Brienne is, Duncan had a lot of that.
Okay, do you remember the part in the knighting scene where Tyrion sort of, like, gets up to take a closer look at what's happening? And, you know, like, if that knighting scene, if Jaime knighting Brienne were to happen now, Tyrion would have gotten his phone out and taken a photo, right?
For sure.
Or like, you know, a quick painter would have painted a beautiful oil painting of it. And then you want to frame that shit. In fact, I would have two copies made, one for Jamie, one for Brienne, so they can forever treasure it and frame it on their wall. And if they want a nice, yet sensibly priced frame, they should probably try framebridge.com, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Framebridge.com, here's how it works. You just go to framebridge.com and you upload your photo, or they'll send you packaging to safely mail in your physical pieces. If you have physical artwork that you bought from an artist, mail it in, get it framed. Preview your item online in any frame style, choose your favorite, or get free recommendations from Framebridge's talented designers. Then the expert team at Framebridge will custom frame your item and deliver your finished piece straight to you, through the Army of the Dead, to Last Hearth, where I mourn my relatives, or they can deliver to Mom in time for Mother's Day, in time for Episode 5 of Game of Thrones. You could get something framed for your mom when you place your order by Sunday, May 5th. Instead of the hundreds you'd pay at traditional framing stores, their prices start at $39, and all shipping is free. Plus, our listeners will get 15% off their first order at framebridge.com when they use our code SOS. Neil, what would you send to a friend for Game of Thrones Episode 5?
I really am now stuck on this oil painting of the fireside chat scene that I would like to have hanging above my television. So I'm going to see if I can figure that one out.
Yeah, I'm going to need someone to get right on that. If
this may be too good of an idea.
Is anyone listening and have their oil paints ready to make this for me so that I can spend a lot of money on it, frame it?
Yeah.
But no, I will spend a lot of money on the art, but not on the frame, because I will use framebridge.com.
Right. And when you do it, and when you order a custom gift for any mom, be it the mother of dragons or your actual just mom, you can do it in minutes. You go to framebridge.com and use promo code SOS. And remember, you'll save an additional 15% off your first order. So go to framebridge.com, promo code SOS. One more time, it's framebridge.com, promo code SOS.
Should we talk about the Sansa and Daenerys scene?
Absolutely.
We should talk about all the scenes.
All right, let's do it. Neil, I have not heard your thoughts yet on the Sansa and Daenerys theme. Oh, well, a little bit, but mostly Dave's in the bonus pod. But what are your thoughts?
Here's my takeaway from the, and I think Dave may have touched on this earlier, where I think Sansa shows in this scene that she has the upper hand. And I think that this may be the key, in my mind at least, to how the Daenerys and Jon thing gets solved. Because think about where Daenerys is at now. She knows that Jon Snow has, if it comes out that Jon is Aegon Targaryen, he really does have a claim. She also knows that the North doesn't like her. And the woman in charge of the North is Sansa. And they had this moment, this lovely moment. And then Sansa gets to the business of it. And she's like, listen, we're not going to do it. We're not kneeling for you. And I think that's really interesting from a political standpoint. I don't know if we have any, I have no idea if we have enough time to get there, but I love the prospect that Sansa is operating. She's putting that in Dany's mind, and that may potentially be very important when it comes time to decide who gets to be in charge of the whole thing. So I thought that was a really fascinating moment, on top of it just being just a really great little performance piece from two actresses that, you know, we had not seen really. That this I thought was the real chance for them to shine together. The episode one stuff felt forced because there was a lot of stuff that felt rushed in that episode, but this one was really good.
Because it doesn't occur to Daenerys to talk to Sansa until Jorah tells her.
That is, you know, it's unfortunately long way to go to get there. It's a good conversation.
Jorah's like, I have the ideas. One, forget Tyrion. Two, go talk to Sansa.
I'm gonna go yell at my niece.
Not doing it for me, but like Jorah at the end of that scene, he's like, I have one more suggestion. And I thought he was going to be like, apologize to poor Sam. And then she didn't. And it was Sansa. And I was like, who cares? Jorah, come on. No, I mean, I really love the Sansa Daenerys scene, so I do care. But I was just like, how weird that Jorah would be like. I mean, I guess if he's like acting as her advisor, like go make nice with the girl or like whatever.
You would think, though, you're right. You would think, though, that like that would fall to someone like a Varys, who is curiously absent from speaking in this episode, but it's like, the thing that caught me off guard about Jorah is is he a political animal? Like he's just a loyal guy to Daenerys.
Yeah.
So there's
you're right. It should have been Varys. And like,
yeah, well, and I do understand
or something like that. Cause gave Varys nothing to do in this episode.
Absolutely nothing. I understand why Jorah would go to bat for Tyrion a little bit because he did spend a lot of time with him and they need to sort of make that worth it. But yeah, I think it was just weird to me for Jorah to be like, actually, Grace, you should be cool with Tyrion.
And Sansa.
Sansa.
It was very weird.
Yes.
What do you make of the Jon and Daenerys stuff in this episode? Because like I liked all the Jon and his boys stuff. Like, I yelled out loud. I really don't usually have these kinds of emotions about Game of Thrones, but when when Ed and Beric and Tormund roll into the courtyard and Sam's there and Jon's there, I literally yelled out loud, "The boys are back." like, why did I do that? I don't know, but I did it. And it felt so nice to see them all together. And so, like, I know that Jon was, like, avoiding Daenerys in this episode so that they could have their conversation at the very last minute so that it was, like, to be continued. But I'm just curious what you guys thought of that and what you guys thought of, like, the Night's Watch sort of.
It feels like a very northern thing for Jon to be such a coward about talking about his emotions with the woman he is dating, by the way. So it's just, there's just something really great about like Kit's performance in these scenes where he just sort of gets up and walks away sheepishly. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like they drew it out a little too long, but they needed it at the end of the episode. So I don't know how else you get there. Without Jon being weird for a day. The one thing that I was left with when they have their little nod, like at the end of the episode where they have their little nod, is this conversation is like far from over. So this feels like big chunks of next week will still include this conversation between Jon and Daenerys. I think they just kind of wanted to get it out there.
I know, but like, can you believe they're going to be like fighting,
battle
and fighting between them at the same time? And
that's something I am curious about.
A one-sided fight, right? Because Jon doesn't care, right? Jon just feels like sad and conflicted, but he's not like,
he's been very quiet about it.
Shit, bitch. Now who's the heir to the Iron Throne? You know, like that's not his attitude. So,
well, that's the weird thing is in the second conversation, it seems like when she's like, "You have a claim to the throne," the look on his face is like, "I haven't thought about that." But Sam just like fucking told him like last night.
But also, still, as I've mentioned elsewhere, no one has said the word like incest or its like counterpart.
Yeah, that's true.
Yet at all. We've had three versions of this conversation.
I do feel like this is one of the weird things that I think they have to solve, but I have a theory as how they're going to solve it, is that they've dropped a lot of bombs right before a bunch of other ones go off, like real ones. So it's really hard to see how they like reconcile all this, but I do understand the whole Jon thing of, I don't understand why you told her now, because Jon seems like he's in the mindset of, we need to do this battle thing and then figure this all out. So I don't understand why he just then told her.
Did you see?
Thinks he's going to die.
Did you see Angie Hahn's tweet about this?
I did not.
I'm going to badly paraphrase Angie's great tweet, but she says something like, "I don't care what Jon's 23andMe said. Only a Stark would like deliver such politically advantageous news."
I did see this tweet
with
actually.
Such bad timing.
I mean, it is. It's
and
terrible
in that moment,
timing.
In that moment, he was truly dead son.
Here is another question.
We'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about my mother when
we'll
I get
talk
back.
About our family ties later. Here's the big question for next week, and we can get more stormy on this later, but the battle episodes usually involve a lot of, let's call it battle foreplay. So there's a lot of talking that's probably going to get done next week too. So unless it just starts and it's crazy the whole time, I feel like they wanted to get the bomb in episode two, the Jon bomb to Dany, but the real conversation is not going to happen until next week. And I think we get it before the battle would be my sort of general prediction, not knowing anything, I guess.
Oh, if you're doing a good prediction, here's my lamest possible way it could go prediction.
Excellent. Go.
We were told this because at some point during the battle, we're going to be given a shot of Daenerys where we're supposed to think this is where I could take out Jon. Worst idea.
She gets tempted to go full Mad Queen.
I don't like
She's
it.
Like, there's like a showdown with the Night Queen, the Night King, and it's like, looks like he's gonna win, and she's like, I could get them both. I could be queen right now.
I mean, she's already left him to die once, but that was before they were boning, so.
Right. So now it'd be like a double betrayal. And then it's like, if you don't love each other, then what's this whole knee-bending thing about? And we definitely do not have time to figure that out.
Or Daenerys lets Jon get torched by Aerion, but he survives because he's Targaryen.
Oh, and then they just...
And then he's just super pissed for the rest of the show.
They're just like those two people that are dating but hate each other, just like for the rest of the season.
They're like, we have to stay together for the kids.
Let me ask the queen, what do you think, Your Grace? Should we survive? And then they're just sniping at each other.
You're right, no, this is the worst possible idea.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad I got it out there in the air, so now we didn't. Because I also, like a bonus podcast last week, predicted that Davos and Gilly would talk about having the same person teaching them to read and about like literacy. Then surprise, surprise, listen to Joanna's interview with Brian Cogman. He's like, well, I originally had this scene where they like work back to figure out Shireen taught them both about literacy. And I was like, oh, good. I'm glad I spoke the bad idea out because
the good idea was better, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah. Mira yeah. Shireen is so much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although that girl's doomed.
Yeah, Defender of the Crypt
is so much better. Yeah, Defender of the Crypt is definitely not a title you want to have next week. All right. I guess I want to transition in the storms as it looks like we're there, but then everybody would yell at us because we're leaving out one very important scene. Neil.
Yes.
Do you count how many leeches have been put on your penis?
Yes, I can count. It's zero.
You keep count? Oh.
Yeah, it's zero.
Yeah, see, I don't count. I don't count. Yeah, just like you. I'm just like Neil. I don't count.
Is Gendry counting the leeches in his three number? Because there were three leeches.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he's just...
Is Gendry lying to her?
I mean, if that was...
This is not a good way to start a relationship.
Evaporate into nowhere space. That's like, that's a great coupling.
I know. Dave was like, why didn't you ask Brian Cogman about dick leeches? I was like, sorry, but I just did it.
Sorry, didn't have enough dick leech time. I thought this was an extremely well-executed scene. The actors were great. I thought it was very classy. But also, this felt emotionally honest for Arya and Gendry. Based on their shared and then own unique journeys. And, I think we talked about it last week. We were just sort of hoping that somebody would get it before mm-hmm. everybody gets it. And I'm glad it was Arya because you talk about characters who've gone through a lot of trauma. Arya's is sort of a specific murdery trauma. and it allows her to have a moment of sort of pure animalistic humanity. And I think that it gets to that moment in the end of the episode where she seems like a little bit of the old Arya is still in there. So I wonder if they're trying to complicate things for her, but I'm just hoping that it's like Arya's, you know, she's a grown up now. She knows what she wants. She's out here killing people, doing what she wants, being a lady, getting hobbies. It's great.
I think when I'm... I actually went on a really
long tear. Or not being a lady of Winterfell. Sorry, well, she's being a rich girl.
I actually went on a really long tear about this on A Cast of Kings, and we actually had to cut some of it out for reasons. But so if you listen to the live show, you got the full thing, and if you didn't, you didn't. So tune in live, I guess. But I'm thinking about the people who objected to it. I won't say that. Okay. Speaking to the people who objected to it, I guess one thing I could say that I understand where they're coming from is that I do think they did kind of not the best job with Arya for, seasons 5 through 7. And so, like, you know, the whole thing was that Arya is getting her humanity stripped away, and then she comes back to Winterfell, and she is getting back in touch with her Starkishness and her humanity and all that sort of stuff. But, like, it's all too, it all feels like a little too abrupt for some. Like, I understand that. I understand that, like, Arya's dehumanization and then her rapid rehumanization, like, is leaving people feeling a little, like, spun out. This is aside from, like, we watched her grow up, you know, like, because I think that's silly because Emilia Clarke is somebody's daughter too, and you had no problem with her being naked. So I don't think a boy, a male actor would have gotten this kind of feedback at all, because there's something about how we feel about our daughters, you know, like blah, blah, blah. They can't be sexual beings, blah, blah. But if like a boy had done it, you'd been like, yeah, you're a man now, bro. I'm confident of it.
Or if there were a scene of like all the Stark boys shirtless getting their hair cut in like the first episode,
or like, Tom,
no one thought that was weird.
Tom and in bed with Marjorie, which did not have this pushback. So anyway,
I was surprised. I was pretty genuinely surprised when I saw that there were people really animated about being against this. And I get it, but it sort of caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah. So I kind of understand that reaction where you're sort of like, oh, I wish I could see the character progression a bit more, that divorced from some of the other like stupid reasons to be upset about it. That being said, something I said, I think on the part of A Cast of Kings that survived, but maybe not, and I'll just say it to you now, is that this is episode 2 of a 6-episode final season. So we're like in mid arc for Arya, right? In theory, like unless she's just stabbing people for the rest of the season, there's more to come from this. And so I agree that maybe it will be executed poorly in the long run. But for right now, I think I had no problem with it. And I think, you know, people who have, well, maybe that's what people said to me about like the Sansa stuff. So maybe I should just take my own note. Anyway, I don't know. It's complicated. It's what I wish people hadn't been talking about the next day. I just like couldn't believe it that like hot take discourse swallowed up this like beautiful gem of an episode on like at least my Twitter timeline. So it was really bumming me out.
Yeah, I think that was a surprise. That was the part of it to me. It was like I sort of logged onto Twitter and I was like, oh, we're doing this conversation. We don't have to.
We don't have to have this conversation.
This is a good episode. We don't have to.
All right.
Yeah, but I will say this. I mean, obviously, I've never been a teenage girl, but that it felt like an emotionally honest scene for both sides. Like, it's the end. They think it's the end.
Yes, definitely. I want to loop to another pair of characters that surprisingly thought it was the end and that the North was crappy. Grey Worm and Missandei before we, I guess, I'll let Neil close out with Tormund thoughts. But first, let's do this. Weird? Was it weird? That was like the one weird scene to me, because it's not that, maybe it is because I really don't think that they both die next episode, because I don't know. It feels weird to me that not have them and die in a more important battle.
It kind of feels like the show like maxed out its like weird flex before the battle quota, where it was like, there's a lot of people saying stuff that you would normally say right before you get killed. So some of these have to be fake outs. And for some reason, the Grey Worm one, it feels like the one that's fake.
That they hit really hard because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. So I don't know. It feels like there's more to this, the Grey Worm Missandei saga than this next episode, but I don't know. Maybe
it would be a weird way for them to go out, I feel, if that was their conversation, and only weird in the sense that it doesn't feel right to me. Not weird in the sense that I could like not track it back to the plot, and you know, him promising to take her back home is very sweet and makes sense. I just think there should be something more there.
I will say this. Do you guys read the Chris reviews?
I love those. I didn't read it this week, but I love those.
I'm going to spoil this week's. I'm very sorry.
Will you say exactly what it is and like spell it out, because it's an unusual spell?
Yes. Chris Review. Actually, the best thing to do is chrisreviews.com. It's chrysreviews.com, right? Let me double check in it. Yes. Chrys. And the episode two review, probably one of my favorite ones was it's just a shot of Missandei as the two children are walking away, and she's like, "Goodbye, racist children."
Yeah, I have to die tomorrow.
Right? Like, hello, racist children. Goodbye, racist children.
Goodbye, racist.
I don't know what. I'm curious as to whether there's a larger point that they're trying to make about the North, or if this is just their easiest way to show us that the North are like stubborn asshole, probably totally racist people. That might be all it is. I just don't know if there's like a payoff to that.
Is it like, so we don't feel bad when they all die tomorrow or on Sunday?
Maybe.
It's like, oh, they were, it's okay. They were racist.
It's totally fine, guys. We don't need to worry about the
you
North
guys,
anyway.
You guys didn't want us to turn the racists into zombies that then we could then kill horribly? Isn't that like the fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right. Neil, Man Tormund had a another banner episode.
Just a killer episode from my guy.
Tormund is the one character because he's had so many good monologues that make it look like they could kill him off the next week, and it would be like a good send-off for a television character on a dramatic medieval fantasy series. But what if Tormund lives because this is just how Tormund comes to every situation? He's unkillable with his optimism about how he's going to die. It's a really weird balance that this performance works and the character works, and the love triangle showdown seems like perfectly balanced between him and Oathkeeper.
Is it a love triangle showdown? That's my thing about Tormund. Here are a couple of things I have to say about Tormund.
hit me.
First of all, Tormund almost rhymes with Joramin, who Joramin and the original Stark that took down the first Night King in the lore. So, you know, just saying. Tormund is the best possible friend in Westeros. Like, he's the best friend to Jon. I feel like in this episode, yes, Tormund is very flirty. He's got a real way about him. But I really love how he, even though there's this like interplay between him and Jaime and Brienne, where it's obvious that they're having this sort of moment over Brienne, which makes Brienne super uncomfortable, which is very on brand for Brienne. But I just love that he supports individuality in everyone. Like, he believes the whole wildling thing. Like, I'm a free man. You should be free. Laws don't matter. Kneelers don't matter. All this bullshit doesn't matter. You should be a knight. I should be a knight. Everybody should drink goat's milk. Everybody should have a good time, and let's go kill all these people and almost die, but then not die. That is the spirit of Tormund Giantsbane, and it came through in this episode so brilliantly. So
yeah, his standing ovation clap is going to be, you know, one of the Tormund
gifts. So it's funny. People, I love to joke about the fact that I love Tormund and that I want him to have all the happiness. This is kind of the moment I didn't know I was hoping for between Tormund and Brienne, because I was like, I don't want Tormund to be creepy toward Brienne. I like that he admires her, and I love that is he just sees her strength as beauty. Or that's sort of what draws him in is strength, and she has that. And I think he gets it. He knows what the boundaries are of this relationship. I think he can see it, that she really is in love with Jaime. And he's just super supportive anyway, because he's like, you know what? She fucking rules, and I'm here to support that. So that's my guy.
Yeah, I mean,
I dig it.
I'm fine with, like, in retrospect, now that I've gotten what I want, I'm fine with like all the Tormund jokes over the years. I just like did not want that to be like a serious thing for anyone.
Right.
The
Tormund, he's just jokes, a guy with a crush.
Yeah. And that's fine. And that is fine. But like all the people in my mentions who are not anyone who I've like ever interacted with before, but all the people in my mentions who were seriously saying like, no, she should really be with Tormund. I hate to tell you, I muted them this week.
She loves Jaime.
It was like,
I'm sorry,
you guys
but
are watching, you guys are watching a different television show than I'm watching, and that's okay.
I feel like they're also watching a different show than Tormund is in. Like, he gets it. And that's, I think, what's most important. I will say this, in response to our poll, I cannot remember who tweeted this, so I'm so sorry. But one of the best responses I saw was, I can't pick Tormund because he would never take it. And that is extremely true. Like, I can't give him the Valyrian plot armor because he wouldn't want it. He loves courting death.
Aww. All right, we're going to talk more about that scene around the fire, but more in the context of which one of them we think might be exiting the series in the storm. Do we have any final calm thoughts before we storm away? And the people who don't want to hear spoilers can press pause, and this podcast will be there for them after the finale's over. You can come back and laugh at how wrong and right we were, but not cry and need to go smoke a cigarette. Definitely don't do that. If you have any doubt, we will see you next week.
All right. Now we have reached the time of the show where we would like to thank our small council members. We have so many new small council members. Thank you guys all. I know you want all of those bonus pods. So we want to thank Molly Callahan, perhaps, Gabriel Buxo, Pat Jukins, Mac, Byron Gilbert, Jaron Colvin, Kaisha Solomon, Allison Heishman, Jennifer Hill, Angelica Cotto, Lauren Reed, and Ivan Mijares. Thank you guys so much.
I would like to add to those thanks with Agnes Marja, Grace O'Keefe, Dan Mueller, Jefferson Grubbs, Catherine Davis, Dickie Moe, Jason Curry, Priscilla Canna, Keely Ralstead, the Ghost of Ghost, D Donuts, and Robin Nystrom.
And guess what, guys? I also have a group of people that I would like to thank on behalf of all of us, of course. And it is Alex Payton, Joe Galena, Aaron Badillo, Lauren Bree, Bryce Winnegar, April Adams, Amy, Mother of Dragons, Breaker of Chains, very convenient last name, Ole Baumann, Catherine Altmeyer, Samantha Mason, Matt Polari, and Michaela Kuipert. Thank you all very much.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last. And you're in my way.
And we're back in the storm. You just heard a dude get pushed off Pike's bridges. If you're hearing me sing, you're gonna hear some spoiler speculation. All right. Who's tying first next week? Guys, seriously.
Oh, yeah, our bet. Actually know. Our bet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is an important bet.
Oh, is
bet,
this in the storm? Okay.
Well, isn't it? Should I mean we're in the storm now, so that's where the bet pays off.
Okay. Here's what I'll say. I don't actually know for sure who survives the Battle of Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going off some vague information that I have, and then also Game of Thrones. HBO is releasing these videos where they're interviewing cast members, and if they're interviewing cast members in the bright sunshine of the King's Landing set, I'm like, that character survives.
Or if they're wearing a different shirt, like Joe Dempsey, which one of my writers pointed out this week.
Yep, Joe Dempsey. We've got Sansa, Arya, Joe Dempsey, Brienne, and Jaime all on the King's Landing set. We've got your boy Tormund and Podrick are on the Winterfell set, and they look like shit. They're like covered in blood and stuff like that. So I think
Tormund.
It might be a fake out, but it seems like their exit interviews happened at Winterfell. So I feel like Pod and Tormund, who are already high on our death list, are going. There's been some intel that perhaps Grey Worm is surviving. Which makes me worried for Missandei, actually. People are like, oh, Grey Worm is definitely dying. I'm like, well, maybe it's Missandei, though. And then Jaime survives. So Theon, definitely on the list of to go. Pod and Tormund, definitely on the list to go. Jorah seems very likely to go. I say the first one out, and this is a named character. It doesn't have to be any of those, but it's a named character. First one down, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and yeah, Gendry survived. We already talked about that. Gendry survived so he and Arya can have sex some more.
And so he can build all kinds of fancy weapons.
Also for that, her. For sure. And he gets a new shirt.
Right. He's a very useful boyfriend to have. He's,
I mean, right?
He can make you cool.
He's got king too.
For a murderer, yeah. He's like the best option.
Ed. Oh, no. You. Oh, Dave called Ed. So what did I call in our chat, Dave? Did I say Bod?
Oh, I don't remember who you actually
okay,
called.
Okay, you called Ed, though, so I'm going to give that to you. Are you still sticking by Ed?
Yes, still sticking by Lord Commander Dolorous Ed is being first down.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I took Pod. All right, so I
I'm trying to think of like what the most fucked up one would be. Ghost.
Yeah, Ghost is pretty rough. I've heard that Ghost dies saving John.
Later? Or in this episode?
In this episode.
Oh.
Definitely, like, Ghost is on the dying list, for sure.
That feels later in the episode,
yeah,
though.
It doesn't feel like first? Opening. Yeah.
I don't know. I still like Spear Comes from the Distance. Just kills the dire wolf before there's any hand-to-hand combat.
I like the idea of... Someone mentioned the idea of Nymeria saves Gendry.
Nymeria saves Gendry for Arya. That's we really have fiction. Too much time that's in our hands true. Here. It feels like, okay, so the question really is, who's going to die before the melee part of the battle starts? So, like, when you have White Walkers charging and they're shooting arrows and all that stuff, is there anybody who gets clipped? That's a tough one.
I mean, Ed really does feel like a good one, because they're going to save Pod. Like, Pod's going to hurt us later, right?
Yeah, the most hurtful ones feel like they will sort of be
Ed,
in the chaos.
I mean, much love to Ed, but, like, Ed is A, definitely dead, right? And B, feels like an early, like, ooh, that kind of hurts, but I'm still okay, you know? Before, like...
Right, like, oh, they're going to be serious. Like, we didn't know that for some reason.
Oh, no.
I mean...
The zombies eat baby Sam or whatever.
I know what the most hurtful one would be.
Did we say hurtful? We said first, but okay.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm trying to figure out what the most hurtful first one would be.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Somebody who's already outside the walls of Winterfell. Jorah.
Yeah. All right.
Jorah feels like a... Jorah... Okay, so my thought here is Game of Thrones is going to kill a bunch of people we love in this episode, but a lot of it's going to happen at the end when it all goes to shit, which is what we're assuming happens, or what we... pretty much no happens. Jorah feels like one that you could do early, and it would be super resonant to other characters throughout the rest of the episode, and it would be messed up. But I don't know, maybe he's one of the ones you save, but I'll take Jorah. Why not?
Throw Daenerys off her.
I don't know what I'm losing here if I lose, so you know, sort of my
dignity
style.
But I'd also like to hear from our listeners, I guess, in I mean you can just tweet it at us, I guess, or drop it in the Slack in the Storm channel. I didn't realize we were doing it in the Storm section feels tougher. But, I mean, obviously we had to because we're informed.
Yeah, special. It's for the Storm people.
We're informed by things we know. So, yeah. Is there anything else Storm-wise that we want to talk about before we hop off? Because we don't know a lot about next week's episode.
That's sort of the thing I've been wrestling with, is that we know the lay of the land, but we don't really know how the battle plays out.
I know a bunch of Ironborn die. That's something I know.
Yeah. I'll ask something for people. So there's been like little bits and pieces of speculation masquerading as leaks on some Reddit threads. Do we think those people have any idea what they're talking about?
There's been so many that
so many.
It's just like a sea of, you know, like, but I mean, do you want to hear my like galaxy brain conspiracy theory about like what kind of dimensional chess HBO is playing?
Absolutely.
I think HBO intentionally leaked those first two episodes to like make the spoiler fiends feel confident.
Like lay the fuck off.
Feel confident that the other episodes will leak, but now the gates are shut and there will be no more leaks.
Ooh.
Well, it'll be up to, what is it, Amazon Prime Germany again.
HBO Nordic.
Someone was like, someone on Free Folk was like, you know, they did like this whole elaborate, like, you know, thank you for your service, DirecTV. Thank you for your service, Amazon Germany. You're to next Hulu Nordic.
It is interesting. I mean, I think that this is going to be the theme of this weekend is you'll, I think we're going to be surprised at what we didn't know. And I don't know what that is, but I think there's going to be enough in this this episode's going to be huge and long. There's going to be so much stuff in here that we didn't see coming. And that's what excites me the most.
If the gold company shows up...
Wait, are you saying
up,
spoilers are bad?
No, no, no. I mean, I know we know the results of the battle. I mean, we know that the battle doesn't go well, but we don't know the how quite yet. And I think that's really good.
What I don't understand is their retreat plan.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's there's huge questions to like, how do they escape? How do they know when to flee?
Kim pointed out that in the like production episode, because they did the like how they built Winterfell this season, sort of like how they got it ready for battle. And she mentioned that they like went to the trouble of building a back gate, which they've never built before. So I'm like, do they just go out the
some
back
sort of
door?
Tunnel that Tyrion knows about that no one else knows about?
And like Pod has to hold the door for them while they leave out the back. So what's happening?
Well,
before we go, do we have like there's this theory going around that I don't know that I agree with, that the Night King is not going to be in this battle at all.
It's an interesting theory.
I was rereading that thing that the actor who plays the Night King, Vladimir Frychik, is that right? Did I get that right? Anyway, he told, I think it was actually Entertainment Weekly, that he had this like intensive moment that was like the end of Hard Home with Jon. And so we were just assuming that the Battle of Winterfell ends with the Night King raising our faves back from the dead in a very like Hard Home-esque moment. But if you read that quote from him, he doesn't say it happens in episode 3.
It's true. Do we think,
because if it happens in the final episode, then Tyrion burning everybody is completely justified and that story point doesn't work. So of course it happens in episode
3. It probably does. I just wanted to introduce that ambiguity, because I was like, I went back and searched down the exact quote, because I was like, no, we know he's there because he gave this quote. And then I read it and I was like, well, he did not say episode 3. So I'm just introducing
We're feeling really good right now. We're going to watch the battle. The battle's going to make us feel bad, but then we're going to win, and then we're going to start feeling good about winning. Like, maybe we get enough White Walker lieutenants that, like, the dead start slowing down and, you know, our trench fire works, and everything's going to be great, and then that's when the Godswood attack fucking happens, and we're all screwed, because the Godswood attack is going to come... He's going to come for Bran when he raises the dead.
I have two...
That's, like, the best... strategic time to do
I have
this.
Two oh, quick theories or two quick things I want to say about this. One is Tyrion does mention lighting the trench to Daenerys, I think, which I'm ready to see that happen. I'm ready to see how that works.
That's gonna be fun.
Here's a theory, and this is not based on anything that we know other than that they lose the battle, but what if this battle is all about taking the Night King off his dragon, and that's the win that we think is happening in this battle, and then something terrible happens after that. Like, maybe they get the dragon, but they don't get the Night King, obviously.
I think that's not true, because I know that there's dragon battle later in the season.
It's weird, because it's like, how do they get away?
I know. How do they get away?
It's like, if he's still got his dragon, and he pretty much wins the battle, how do they get more than 10 feet south?
So the idea, I think one idea is that there are tunnels out of the crypt, but you feel like they would have mentioned it. You know,
there is a shot in the next week on where it's, I think it's Beric.
Yeah.
It's either Beric and the Hound or Beric and Tormund at a what looks like a back door sort of thing.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well,
I mean, we need the Hound
to
survive, obviously.
Find out.
Yeah. We'll see. It'll be fun. I can't wait.
Indeed. Next time from us, though, will be tomorrow's Avengers Endgame episode. Until then, where can people find more of your work online? Neil Miller.
You get me over on filmschoolrejects.com. I think I might write something about Avengers Endgame and my personal feelings with it. At Rejects on Twitter, don't forget, follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. Email us your questions, thoughts, comments, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. And don't forget, there is a Thursday question and answer episode for small council members on the Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers.
And Miss Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, and you can hear me talking to Brian Cogman on Still Watching, talking to Dave Chen on Cast of Kings, or talking to Griffin Newman of Blank Check Pod over on Little Gold Men about Infinity War, or no, Endgame this week.
Ooh, you guys got Griffin on Endgame.
We got Griffin.
Big get.
Dave Gonzalez. You can find me at TA70 on Twitter. You can find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. You can find my Game of Thrones coverage on Thrillist.com. And it's especially important this week, before we light the trench and after. You cannot fall down.
Definitely don't fall into the trench.
We will leave you out there.